Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you. Good morning. I guess I can just come face over this direction. You all are here, right? That was awesome to see all of you confirmation students up here. And I'm going to talk about it a little bit later, but it was amazing hearing on Monday, when you guys shared your statements of faith. That was just so good, so good. Well, there are two services per year that are the most highly attended services. Any guess for the church which services those would be? It's kind of a softball question here. This is the kind of question you're excited about where you're like, well, I got one right on this test. Easter and Christmas, that's right. So we just celebrated Easter a couple weeks ago. And, you know, if people are only going to come on two Sundays, those are good Sundays to come because they're great messages of promise. Certainly with Easter, the hope that we have that Jesus didn't stay dead, that he conquered death, and the hope that we have in eternal life, the good news that is present there. And then with Christmas, you know, we have the familiar passage of Scripture. You know, in those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. The words that we have in Luke that remind us of Mary and Joseph's journey all the way to Bethlehem while Mary is pregnant, and they're looking for a place to stay, and there is a lack of places to stay because other people had traveled as well. And as we've talked about hospitality, likely many people had been invited in to other places to stay, and so there was a family that did have space for them in the manger. And so Jesus is born in the manger because there was no guest room available for them. Well, today we're talking about making room, making space in the midst of our busy lives so that we can extend hospitality to others. And there's some of us that, for us, that comes naturally. It's the thing that we're constantly doing. You may be that person that is always wanting to include somebody. You know, you find them sitting on the sidelines, and you're like, come on over, be a part of what's happening. You know, you're in a circle of people, and you can see that they're on the outside, and you want to include them in. That is amazing. Keep that up if that is you. And for others, we don't necessarily see that those people are missing out on things. And so we have to become more aware of how we can open their eyes to invite them in to experience the love and grace that God longs for us to have in our lives. So how do we make room in our busy lives to do that? We make room for things in our lives that matter. We make space for things in our lives that matter. I mean, you may miss a meal or two, but it's not like you miss a meal or two and then you're like, ah, forget it, I'm gonna quit eating because I missed a couple meals. Like, you find a way to eat again. But there are other things like that where we set priorities. Maybe it's our family or our work that's a priority, or maybe it's our faith and we're never going to miss a Sunday, or we think about the fun activities or hobbies that we have that we love, and we do everything we can to make sure that happens, and then other things fall into place. Maybe you're a foodie and you're already thinking about what you're going to have for Mother's Day brunch today. Sorry if you weren't, now you are. Or maybe you're thinking about others. Maybe you're somebody that's constantly thinking about other people. Or maybe you're someone that is thinking about yourself and the things that you have going on in your own lives. Well, whatever your priorities are, we all have them, and we're going to examine that a little bit later this morning, and as we talk about how do we make room in the midst of our busy lives so that we can be hospitable. Well, last week, if you were not here, a picnic table showed up, thanks to Devin Kelly over here for building it, and it was not painted, but during the course of this week, I think we have a slide that will show our workers who spent some time painting it. There's Claire Perkins who helped, and Craig Henderson, and I think Lauren Perkins may have been involved a little bit as well too, but they spent time painting the turquoise table. And last week, as Jen mentioned, we just started a series on hospitality. So this week, last week, and then two more weeks ahead, we will be talking about hospitality. And there was a book that was written by a woman named Kristen Schell, and the book is titled The Turquoise Table. And her story was is that she wanted to find ways to be more hospitable, but if she's honest, she didn't want to clean up her house and invite people in. So the easiest thing for her to do was to put a table out in her front yard, and she put a turquoise table out in her front yard, and believe it or not, the neighbors that were walking by would say, "What's with the table?" And she'd say, "Well, I'm out here at the table because I want to get to know my neighbors. I want to have a place where there can be fellowship and conversation." And so this is a visual for us throughout this series. And you noticed last week it was not painted. This week it's painted. Next week there'll be some more design on it. Each week it's going to morph into something more, and then eventually is going to make its way out to the little triangle shaded area over there that we call the Applewood Forest. And it will be a great place. I'm looking forward to meeting someone for coffee at this table someday. I don't know who. Maybe it'll be you. You'll never know. But and don't worry, you won't be in trouble. It'll just be fun to hear your story. But this is that symbol for us of making space. If I had to guess, I would venture to say that most of you do not enjoy being interrupted. Like if you are heading somewhere and you've got a plan, you don't like there to be traffic where you can't get through and you're going to be late to something. Or if you're set out on a task, you want to finish it. You want someone cutting you off and jumping in to have another conversation about something. Well, in our passage today, we're going to find a section of scripture where there is an interruption. And this interruption that happens, Jesus actually welcomes. And the interruption provides opportunity. The interruption provides opportunity. So let's listen to these words from Luke chapter 8, verses 40 to 56. "Now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a synagogue leader, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. 'Who touched me?' Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, 'Master, the people are crowding around and pressing against you.' But Jesus said, 'Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me.' Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace.' While Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. 'Your daughter is dead,' he said. 'Don't bother the teacher anymore.' Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, 'Don't be afraid. Just believe, and she will be healed.' When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. 'Stop wailing,' Jesus said. 'She is not dead, but asleep.' They laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But he took her by the hand and said, 'My child, get up.' Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astonished, but he ordered them not to tell anybody what had happened." So in this passage, there are a couple things that are parallels for both Jairus and his family and for the woman who are bleeding. And I want to point those out from the beginning and then kind of talk through a little bit of this passage. But the first is that the girl is said to be 12 years old. The woman has been suffering from this affliction for that same amount of time, 12 years. So they're both, this number 12 is significant. The second is that Jairus, who is a synagogue leader, someone who would have been respected, as a synagogue leader, he would be making decisions about what scriptures were being read. He would be making decisions about who would be preaching. He would make decisions about which hymns they would sing. Both he and this woman fall at Jesus' feet. Now, from his position of prominence in the synagogue, he is significantly humbling himself to fall at someone else's feet, to beg for them to come. But both of them fall at Jesus' feet. And then thirdly is her faith. Her faith is something that Jesus points out and ultimately says, your faith has healed you, go in peace. And when Jesus arrives, he says to Jairus, just believe, have faith, and she will be healed. So those three components right there are significant that you will see as kind of as a thread throughout. So Jesus is surrounded by this crowd of people. How many of you have ever been in a big crowd of people and you absolutely hate it? Like you hate people pushing in on each side. If you see those hands raised, if either of you on each side just kind of scoot towards them a little bit, that would be great. Crowds, when you're surrounded by people, it's uncomfortable sometimes. And I was talking to Kurt recently. He was telling me he had gone to a Garth Brooks concert, and he's like, we couldn't even walk. We were walking with everybody. You're just crammed in there. There's so many people around you that it's hard to move. This is what they are experiencing because everyone was so excited to get close to Jesus. The text said that he was almost crushed because there were that many people pushing in, trying to get there to reach him. So Jairus has fallen at Jesus' feet. He has begged Jesus to please come to his house and heal his daughter who is dying. And Jesus has said yes. He starts making his way with Jairus towards his house. And yet, he allows for there to be an interruption. He's venturing along the way, and Jesus says, who touched me? Well, the disciples who are with him have got to be thinking, are you kidding me? You're asking who touched you? Who didn't touch you? Might be easier to say because so many people are pressing in. But Jesus doesn't just continue on. And let's be honest, where he was heading, what he had to do was an important thing, but he took time. It's almost like in that moment, Jesus called time out and everything stopped. He hit the pause button and he was present with this woman. He pushed aside the disciples trying to excuse it as something else, and Jesus said, no, it's something more. And the woman comes back to him and falls at his feet. She falls at his feet and then she shares her story. Story is such a powerful thing. And can you imagine the story that she shares? In verse 47, this is all we hear, but you know there is so much more. In verse 47, in the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Now, I don't know about you, but if you've ever been sick or injured or had something that was aggravating and frustrating that lasted for a long time, you know how much you longed for that to go away. I mean, I had tendonitis in my thumb a couple weeks ago and it lasted for only a week and a half, and I couldn't wait for that to go away. But I cannot imagine having suffered something that would isolate one from a community for 12 years. And that's what this woman has suffered. And Jesus stops to hear her story. In the midst of having somewhere important to be, he stops to hear her story. I think it's an important reminder for all of us that Jesus wants to hear our stories too. I know we do it all the time. We diminish our own circumstances because someone else has it much worse. Don't pray for me, pray for this other thing because they have it much worse. But if this story shares nothing else with us, it tells us that Jesus cares about each of those things. Would we not say that someone dying is more important than someone who just needs to be healed? Probably, if we're ranking things in our mind, but Jesus is not ranking things. Jesus sees the person that is present before him and loves and cares for her and listens to her story. This woman who would have been considered unclean gets to share her story. And there is such power in that. On Monday night, I mentioned earlier that I had the privilege of being with all of the confirmation students as they shared their statements of faith. And it was so fun to hear the different stories and the things that are important in their lives, the challenges that they have faced. And these stories, they were brave. They talked about the hurdles that they've had to overcome, the hopes that they have, the faith that they have in Christ. And so many of them mentioned the challenge of COVID and what a two-year period of time of having to take a break from real life to be isolated, and the challenge of that, that just pointed to the importance of our need as Christians, as people, to be together, to be able to be in relationship and community with one another. And in the midst of these stories, there was laughter, and in the midst of these stories, there were tears, and the tears weren't just from them. There were times I was sitting there thinking, that cupcake on the table looks really good, but I cannot use that to wipe the tears from my face. Tissues would have been more helpful at the table. Note for next year. But just to hear those stories and the vulnerability that they had was amazing, because as you hear someone else's story, you can't help but be changed. As you hear someone else's story, you can't help but be changed. And the woman who is sharing her story, Jesus knows her story already, but as she shares that story, there are others who are present there that get to hear her and get to see her as a person after all of this time of the isolation that she has experienced and the pain and the hurt that she no doubt has felt. So Jesus has healed the woman and says to her, your faith has healed you, go in peace. And then he continues on, and as he's continuing on, immediately there are people that say, stop bothering the teacher, your daughter has already died. And Jesus says, it's okay. It's okay. We're going to go to your house. And they go to the house, and the mourners are outside, and they are wailing, and they are crying. And Jesus tells them to stop, because the girl is just sleeping. And what do? They laugh at Jesus. They laugh at Jesus. I would suggest not doing that, because typically it doesn't go well. It goes really well for Jairus and his wife and their daughter. But for those folks, Jesus is able to overcome great, great things. But he goes into the house with Peter, James, and John, and the girl is healed. She comes back to life. And then he says to the family, give her something to eat. I mean, you can imagine the shock of the parents standing there. Wow, she is alive. Give her something to eat. It's again that practical thing of something to do. And so I imagine as they start moving to do that, they are awakened to the fact that she is alive and we are going to need to take care of her as we have before. And then Jesus tells them to do something that, after reading this passage a ton of times in preparation for this message, because most of the time you don't read a passage once and then just go preach on it. Sometimes maybe you just wing it. But typically you read it over and over again, and what happens when you do that is sometimes there's something that maybe if you read it the first time wasn't funny. The last time you read it, you're like, that is hilarious. Now, Jesus tells them to not tell anybody. I'm like, yeah, good luck with the word not getting out about this. I mean, all of the people that are outside that are mourning and wailing, the hired mourners who have been out there, they know that she is dead. They know that she is dead. And can you imagine when the little girl walks out the door, they're going to be, what? I mean, how do you hide that? And then Jen said to say, too, Jen was saying after the first message, she said, I wonder if any of the mourners wondered if they were going to get paid, because we didn't hire you. She's alive. We don't have to pay you for mourning for her. But it's amazing to think of what God does in his touch and his hand on each of our lives. So today's sermon is about hospitality. It's about making room in our busy lives. And how do we do that? How do we make room in the midst of our busy lives? You know, one way is to ask yourself if you are a good steward of your time. Are you a good steward of your time? You know, do you control your time, or does your time control you? And as I started thinking just about stewardship of time, I started thinking to myself about the stewardship in my own life, just in general, and choices that I have made. And I thought of one financial choice that I made that was probably not the best for me, that actually, in the long run, has really taught me a lot. And so when I was a freshman in college, I was running track and cross country for the school that I was attending. I came home for the summer, and I was going to be a physical therapist. I actually have a degree in biology. And so in my physical therapy work that I was doing, I was volunteering and working at a physical therapy clinic, and I just finished my 500 volunteer hours that I needed. And so now I was making money, and I was saving every penny I had, because in my running, I had seen all these people that were triathletes, and the grass just seemed greener. It looked like, well, maybe I could be a triathlete instead of a runner. Running's fun, but maybe I could be a triathlete. So I could swim, I could run, but it's kind of hard to ride a mountain bike in a triathlon. So I was saving money to buy a road racing bike. And I saved up my money for the summer, and I pretty much spent all of it on racing equipment and my bike. And it was so fun at first, until that first ride. And I didn't grow up in Florida. I grew up in a hilly area where everywhere you went, there were hills. And let me tell you, riding a bike on the hills is not as fun as riding the bike somewhere fast and flat where you're just cruising along. So it was a pretty poor financial decision. And I brought my bike back to school my sophomore year, because I thought maybe being in a community of other people that are riding will get me excited. And I went on a couple rides with those people, but there were still hills, and they were so inconvenient. And so my bike's spent more time moving from my bed during the day to over by my closet at nighttime, and it just made this back and forth movement. And as I think about it, it may have traveled more distance doing that than actually riding it. And by the end of my sophomore year, I came to terms that I needed to sell that bike, because it just wasn't gonna happen. I know you're thinking that's impossible. I mean, you look like a triathlete, but I'm telling you, it was time to cut my ties. And so that was a pretty sad day. It was a pretty sad day. But a great reminder of, in the mistakes that we make, we can learn from them. And God can remind us of what other things he might have in store. So as I think about the poor stewardship there, I think we can be just as poor stewards with our time. I mean, think about it with technology. I mean, how many of you have checked your screen time recently to see how much time you've spent on your phone or your iPad or your computer? Don't check till after worship, please, for those of you that are looking. I don't want you to increase your screen time. Or how much sports do you watch? Or how much news are you watching? Is your TV on all the time and you don't realize it, but you're actually consuming some of that? You get the idea. We have to think about how we are spending our time. So how do we make room? Well, we think about our priorities. Sometimes that means we have to turn down good things that are in front of us in order to make more space. I've had conversations with two different people in the last 3 weeks that indicated that they turned down promotions because it was a greater benefit to be together as a family than it would be to make more money and get the promotion. They had to make a sacrifice. They made space for one thing by saying no to another, and I commend them for that. You know, if we said yes to everything, we would be so overwhelmed. If we said yes to everything, we wouldn't have space for all of it, and it would consume us. So how do we make room? We also have to be intentional. We have to be intentional about including others as we're making space. It's the image of an open chair in a small group. If you're in a group of 8 people, you have 9 chairs, representing that there may be someone else who's going to come and join us. And even if you're in a closed group and you have that open chair, it's the reminder in your mind that God always has someone more in store for us, and there are others to include. Or it's when you're standing in a circle of people. Do you have the eyes to see that person who's on the outside of the circle that would want so much to be included and to be on the inside? Or it's having the eyes to see who needs help or who needs care. Yesterday, Team Arnold had an opportunity to be a part of the mulching ministry at MPC. And we went down early in the morning with Pat Sullivan and 150 bags of mulch on the back of his trailer, and we delivered mulch to 4 different places and had a great time doing that early in the morning. And when you're mulching, you're getting dirty, but you're having conversations with people. And the last house we went to was a gentleman named Rick Mills, and Rick has been involved with MPC through the great banquet that we have going on here. And he was kind enough to make us lunch afterwards. And as we were leaving his house, we started driving down the road, and we got just 2 houses away. And my eyes are on the road, but I see someone in my peripheral vision, and we keep driving down the road. And then from the back seat, Reese says, "Hey, Dad, there was a shaky old man over there who was spreading mulch in his yard. Can we go help him?" I heard, "Aw," and I also heard, "She called him a shaky old man," which was very accurate, I will say. And so I'm at the intersection, and in my mind, you know, you've had this happen before, you're trying to make a decision. I have one child in the back seat saying, "No, I have to go to the bathroom. We can't turn around and go back." And then at the same time, I'm thinking, tomorrow I'm preaching on making room and space for interruptions. If I don't turn around, I'm not going to be able to preach. So we turned around and we pulled into Rick's driveway, and I said, "Go knock on the door and ask to use their bathroom." And so one child did that. And then the other people in the car got out and started walking down the street, because we left the car at Rick's house and started walking down the street. And you can imagine his response. If you're mulching in your yard and you have a group of 5 or 6 people walk up and say, "Hey, can we help spread your mulch?" You're gonna be a little suspect, am I right? So at first he's like, "Are you trying to charge me money?" And they're like, "No, no." They explained, "We've been spreading mulch. We just want to help you." I don't believe that they said, "We saw that you were a little shaky and we wanted to help you." They just said, "We want to help you." And so he agreed to that, and we ended up helping to spread the mulch around his yard. And Rick came walking down the street too. And if you know Rick, he loves to talk. And so he was telling the guy all about Costa Rica and the feeding centers that are there and the opportunities to serve and how it's gonna be great. And so this man's just talking to Rick while we're spreading the mulch for him, which really was great. It really was great. And at the end of the day, when we were talking about the highlight of our day, hands down for all of us, it had been that interruption. That unexpected encounter to meet this gentleman named Ken, who was there, that we had the chance to spread mulch for in his yard. I mean, the 30 bags of mulch that he had left to go would have taken him a long time, but we were able to knock it out in 20 minutes and head on our way. But the gift of interruptions in our lives, when we make space for them, God uses those. There are so many times where I will get to the end of my day and I'll look back and I'll think, what was something that stood out from today? And oftentimes it's not the thing that I had on my to-do list, but it's what God created as the interruption. I'll think about a conversation that I had with somebody who just happened to come into the office, and there's something going on in their life and they needed prayer for that, and I would be able to pray with them. And that was the highlight at the end of the day. I think for all of us, when we have eyes up and opened, willing to see, what's in store for us. There are amazing things that God has. So how do we make room? We prioritize. We're intentional. As Jen talked about last week, we have a posture and an attitude that is perhaps a little bit different about ourselves, where we think about it being more than just a physical space where we would meet with somebody, but to be open and hospitable, we need to have space up here in our heads and down here in our hearts that we can receive others. Because sometimes it's not easy. It can be a tremendous challenge. And one way to think about doing that is, what if we lived each day with expectation? What if we lived into each day thinking that we might meet our best friend? Would you not look at the day differently? Or if you started the day, if someone told you you were gonna find $1,000 on the ground, I promise you, you would take more steps that day than most, but you would also be looking everywhere. Am I right? You'd be looking everywhere because you would know that something awaits you. But what awaits you is greater than finding $1,000 on the ground. It's you and it's me. It's the one on your right and the one on your left. It's the relationships, it's the friends, it's the connections that are present that are far more valuable to us. Now, growing up, my mom did a great job of including others for Thanksgiving and for Christmas. And so we would have family gatherings at our house, and that included aunts and uncles. But there was always somebody who was joining us that was not a blood relative. One of the people that joined us was Grace Richardson, and Grace was an older woman in the church. All of her family lived in Virginia, and so we were on the other side of the country, and so my mom made sure that she included her, and she would come over and be a part of things and would just be so sweet, and she was the woman that when I went to seminary and came back to my home church and preached my second or third sermon ever, she was the one that leaned to the person next to her whispering, but not whispering, so that everyone in the whole church could hear, "Is that Jack and Ethel's son?" And I wanted to say, "Yes, Grace, it's me, but I didn't. We also had Jack Shaper who joined us. Jack was my mom's third grade teacher. Crazy. But he didn't have family, and so he would come and join us and be a part of the events of those things, and it's so fun to think about how our including them grew our family. We got to hear more stories and make more connections, and those relationships were so rich. It's powerful to think about. And when we make space, when we are open to that, God can do such incredible things. In 2016, you may have heard the story of Wanda and Jamal. Wanda was a grandmother that sent a text to her grandkids, or she thought she was sending the text to her grandkids, that said, "Thanksgiving at my house." And she sent it to a stranger. And Jamal responded, a 17-year-old, he responded back, "Thanks, save a plate for me." And she said, "Actually, you know what? Why don't you come to Thanksgiving?" And so Jamal and Wanda have had Thanksgiving for 6 years together. They continue that connection, all because of a missed text. And I'm not suggesting that if you get a missed text, you know, someone asking to buy your property that you're not selling, that you don't even own, that you respond to it that way. But if you make that space for what God can do, amazing things can happen. In hospitality, God is at work. It is not left up to us. God is at work. God is the one that is working and moving in all of those circumstances. Let's not give ourselves too much credit that it's up to us, but let's make space so that God can do incredible things. All we have to do is make room. Be on the lookout, because Jesus noticed something had happened and he responded by paying attention. He could have kept walking. The woman would have still been healed. But she had the chance to tell her story. And when you tell your story, sometimes you hear yourself, the words that you're saying, and you think, wow, I've been through a lot. And when you get to share that and other people get to hear that, the depth of relationship just continues to grow and to build upon itself. So let us be a church that makes room for others by extending to them the love and grace of Jesus Christ. How do we make room in our busy lives? We extend hospitality. We make space for things that matter for us. So let's make sure that others matter, not just ourselves, not just our comfortable friend groups that we have, but that we make space so that others know that they matter. Friends, we need to pay attention. We need to have the eyes and the ears to be open to what Jesus has in store for us. And like that first Christmas, someone made room. The accommodations weren't the best, but they were out at the turquoise table instead of in the dining room with the fine china. But even though it wasn't five-star accommodations, the room was enough for Mary and for Joseph and for the Savior of the world. So let's do the same. Pray with me. God, thank you for the love that you have for us. Thank you that you make room for us. Help us to be attentive to that and perhaps to stop running from that if you are pursuing us. Help us to listen to the places that you are calling us to. Help us to be people that are able to make room in such a way so that, God, you can do the work to build upon the relationships that are present in our lives. Help us to see interruptions not as interruptions, but as opportunities that you place before us to be able to speak into others' lives. We love you and thank you and pray all these things in your name. Amen.